Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hi, everyone. Today, I'm bringing you Kevin Mack. Kevin is a developer, he's a designer, and he's also a consultant that focuses on creating user interfaces and user experiences for websites that need to scale. So he's quite unique. He's also a co-founder and co-organizer of the Columbus Web Group, which is a very active user group where he participates in growing and educating the community, but he's focused on design, development, best practices, and web standards. So I'm really excited to have him on the show and to give you a very different perspective from the other shows that we have had. And I hope that you learn from his experience, and I hope you enjoy the show. Here's Kevin Mack.
Today we have Kevin Mack on Mentoring Developers. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great, and I've really been wanting to have you on the podcast because of your different perspective. I know that you do a lot of mentoring and teaching, and I know that you're focused on user interfaces and user experiences. So this should be a really nice, unique interview for our listeners. But before we get into that, I'd like you to explain to us who you are. Who is Kevin Mack?
That's a good and complicated question. So I probably have a pretty crazy background. I've been developing since 95, but really grew up around art. My mom was an art director at the Washington Post, and she always said that I could draw before I could talk. So I grew up around art and started development 20 years ago now, and kind of married the two together. And my whole life's been kind of based around art, computers, and really bringing people together. And I love community organizations and just the opportunity to meet new people and hear different stories.
And you are a programmer. Is that fair to say that you describe yourself as a programmer, as a software engineer, as what? Well, who are you?
It's a good question, and I get asked that all the time because I focus on building interfaces, and it's kind of this weird in between a designer and a developer. I've learned a bunch of different languages over the years, but primarily I focus on the front-end code, so the HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. But my day-to-day, 90% of the code I'm writing is actually in CSS and HTML. So I would call myself a developer. But I'm a UI UXer, so that's kind of how I put myself, as a front-end developer, UI UX person.
Do you remember your first encounter with programming?
Yeah, for sure. And it's kind of a funny story, but it's not really that funny, but I just remember my buddy and I really wanted to start making websites. And the reason why we wanted to do it was we wanted to record clips and post them and share them. I don't know with who, but I think it was just between the two of us. So we could have some kind of reference to them in the past, as opposed to it just being on our local computer. So started building websites and doing these really silly recordings, posting them up there. And some early day blogs before I think I even knew that they were called blogs. But I just remember looking at like how the page was rendering and taking some of the concepts that I had in my head. And, you know, in 95, there wasn't too much to do. And I remember the idea of all these tables kind of stacking next to each other. So back then you used tables to set up the grids and the layout for your pages. No one really knew what they were doing. I especially didn't, and I was just really fascinated. And when it really evolved later on to like CSS, getting out there, I remember even like hex values, just thinking how cool they were. And I really think the first day that I started learning basic HTML was the day that I got hooked, and that's where I really decided I wanted to be a developer.
So you're focused on user interfaces and user experiences. and you code in HTML, CSS, which are the technologies or programming languages that you need to know if you want to develop a website and sort of hand code it. But you also dabble in design. Is that, do you spend a lot of time in Photoshop?
Over the past years, yeah, I have. Recently, we've kind of switched over to Sketch. So I don't know if you're familiar with Sketch. It's a really, really awesome program. The way that you're kind of designing it inside of Sketch is more closely related to the output, and the output being the alignment with web browsers. So it's aligned a little bit better with today's technologies and the limitations of the browser. But I do spend a fair amount of time in Photoshop. But a lot of times what the process that I kind of have for designing is not to really go into some graphics program, but it's to really start in this process of where we have concepts. So we start with wireframes, high-level sketches, and then we kind of dive in there and talk about content priority. So it's always really designing the content first and how the content's going to be, you know, cascading throughout the pages and setting priorities, especially from small screens to large screens. And then from there, getting some high-level sketches out there and then opening up Photoshop or Sketch and creating what's called an element collage. So indexing all the UI components, all the components that would eventually make up the design and the interface that people are going to be interacting with. And then from there, putting out some high-level page concepts. And the page concepts are kind of more there as a representation. They're not really a blueprint, but they're just to help the team communicate. So the developer or designer or development team and the design team communicate, make sure that we're on the same page. But there's a lot of pieces that are happening in parallel. And the true refinement and the definition of what the design truly becomes is primarily in the browser for me these days. So that's a long-winded answer, but I do use Photoshop, but I prefer Sketch these days. And I actually do my designing really in the browser, but there's a lot of steps that happen before I can get there.
That's good. I didn't know about Sketch. Thank you for informing me.
Sketch is great.
Did you study any of this in school? At any level? Did you study computer programming or design formally?
No, not really. It was all primarily myself and my buddies nerding out and trying to learn. Lots of, you know, early days of cross communication people in California, Columbus, just taking on a bunch of contract work and making a lot of websites for my friends' parents when I was in high school. So it was just kind of trial by fire, if that's the saying. Classic thing I do is I have a saying or I know about a saying and I mix two of them together. So you may hear a couple of those from me in the next couple of minutes.
That's good. We'll watch out for those and hopefully they're pretty good. So do you have trouble keeping your skills up to date? You know, design doesn't change. Perhaps the design principles don't change as much. But they do change. Programming environments change, technologies change, tools change. Things do change. And how do you keep your skills up to date?
On the design side, you know, there's some visual changes and trends that happen. We've kind of stabilized, but experiences have really evolved. And to me, the interactions and the overall experiences are design. So when a new phone comes out or a new form factor, some kind of new technology comes out, we have to know how we're going to design and create the experience that's right for these new capabilities that our users are expecting when they're coming to our sites and our applications. So that's where a lot of those are on the design side. It's really just keeping up with the devices, the trends that are going on, and making sure that we're aligning to the limitations and capabilities of the browser. And then it kind of directly aligns with on the front end side. So HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. I spend a fair amount of time every single week reading about the next level of CSS. So level 4 CSS is going to be coming out here soon. A lot of specs and drafts are out there. I am constantly going out there. I'm subscribed to a lot of specs and drafts and will contribute to them. So specs and drafts are the future pieces of the web from either an HTML standpoint, so a new element, a new CSS property that can be used to change the look, feel, or the overall styling of a class, as well as JavaScript and the future of ECMA, let's say ECMA 2016 now. But I'm constantly going out there reading. I subscribe to a lot of blogs. That seems like the common answer. But the ones that are my favorite that is a weekly digest is CSS Weekly. That's fantastic. I can't promote that more than enough. So CSS Weekly, JavaScript Weekly, and then I get this monthly kind of combination of all these really great libraries that have come out. It's called Jester.net, and it's kind of a clever name. It's JSTER.net, so like Jester. So their little logo is like Jester. But anyway.
That's clever.
Yeah, and then so I get a lot of updates from there, and my buddies and I run a Facebook group. It's called RAD. It stands for Really Awesome Developers, and it's community. Community comes, I mean, it's constantly pushing, and it's some of the best developers and smartest minds on the technology standpoint that are just saying what's going on in the world of technology. So it's a closed group, but we kind of admit anyone in it if anyone's interested. But those are really my sources where I keep up. I probably spend somewhere between 10, 20 hours a week on just reading and keeping up with what's going on.
So somebody listening to this will be probably thinking, oh my God, you just listed 10 things. I don't know how many. I didn't count, but I'm assuming it's 10 things and 10 different digests and meetup groups and Facebook groups and so on. And if you just spend, I don't know, 2 hours each week on each one of them, that's 20 hours a week. And unless you're doing it every day at, you know, maybe in your job as part of your job, then somebody else might be thinking, well, you know, how can anybody do that? You know, do you not sleep at all? Is that kind of your thing? Or maybe that's your entertainment. Maybe you do it. Maybe you don't go out. That's what you do.
Yeah, it doesn't. Well, I'm a pretty social person, and I think I have a bit of a personal life, but a lot of like my friends are within the industry. And even when we're going out, I feel like we're not going to talk about technology. We're not going to talk about work. 5 minutes later, even if we've had a couple drinks in us, it's immediately back to technology, design, and computers and work. And I think in today's work, you know, it's to be really good at your job today, employers, I think, expect you to be up on the latest trends. I'm not going to speak, of course, for every single company out there. A lot of the research and keeping up with it go hand in hand with my day-to-day work. And it's also, so I don't think I said this, but I'm a consultant, and nowadays I'm a tech, I work at a tech company. It's called Cardinal Solutions. And I'm a consultant that does, of course, UI and UX. And for a consultant to really be, I think, a quality consultant, our clients are expecting us to know the history of the web, the latest trends, but then what's also coming in the future. And for myself, it's kind of a nice place to be because I always have to be looking what's next. So I can, you know, use some time on my job to do that. Definitely not, that's not where I, you know, get all my digestion, but a lot of overlap there. And I think even in previous jobs, when I was working in agencies and even on the client side, it's just kind of expected. You goes hand in hand with your day-to-day job. So, you know, and it's not like I'm going to sit down for 10 hours straight or spend my whole Saturday doing it. It's little pockets of time, like 10 minutes here, 5 minutes here, 15 minutes here. You know, I get home, I'm cooking dinner. As things are cooking, I'm reading something. So it's just finding those little pockets of time. And it is what it's what I love. So it is my entertainment. Don't really, you know, I'd rather read up on the latest trends than maybe even watch a movie.
I think this is really admirable, right? You have this dedication. I mean, I've noticed that. I know that you have it, but I wanted you to say it because it's hard for some people to imagine living like this. But if you got the bug and you're enjoying it and you're reaping the rewards and you're seeing people come to you and ask you questions, you have this ability to inspire other people, maybe that's something that you would like to do for entertainment. And so I really wanted to congratulate you because you've been able to do something that a lot of us are not able to do. So good job.
I appreciate that.
Now, you talked about a lot of your jobs. You have a job right now as a consultant for a consulting company. Before that, you worked for agencies, and you probably had several jobs in your career. Do you remember how you got your first job as either a designer or a software engineer?
That's a great question. Some of the earlier days, it was just people in my class knew that I did computers, and a parent of another student in my class would tell their parent, and then their parent would come talk to me as a kid, because if someone was, teenage or pre-teenage and was saying that they did websites, I'd probably consider them a kid. Looking back at it, it's kind of an ignorant statement, but I definitely got my first jobs was doing independent work from people in my class. And it was just kind of word of mouth. And then my buddy and I, who lives in California, just kind of had his own business that was going, and I just continued to do that. And then I started my own business, and that went on. So it was just independent consulting and doing design and development. And I would even do digital art and sketches of people. So I, instead of like traditional watercolor oil painting, I would draw people, but do it in programs like Photoshop, because you could do some really wild stuff, but they were freehand drawings with the early day stylists that were more painful to use than not. So I would go back between my stylus and my actual mouse to do these drawings, and made a lot of art that way. But my first professional job, I really got hired out of high school for, and I was at MI Homes, and someone that I knew worked there, and I was initially interviewing to be on the IT side, but then they knew I had a background in design, and they wanted me to really be the first person that was back then called a client-side developer and be the person to communicate between design and technology, which was something new that they didn't have. So I talked to them about the IT side, but actually got a job in the marketing side. And from there, that's kind of where everything kind of took off. I always became this weird in between technology and design.
Did you have any trouble getting accepted? I'm asking you this question because you have some unique characteristics, right? We're not going to talk about your tattoos, but
that's what I was going to ask. Are you going to talk about tattoos?
What I'm saying is that people have expectations, and you have something that's different from somebody else. Somebody else, another person out there, might have a different thing that makes them different, right? We are all different, and there is an archetype that expected. In certain industries, obviously, certain formal industries, enterprises, you work, you're expected to be a certain way and look a certain way. And if you're different, either for, religious reasons or for social reasons or for whatever reasons, if you're different, I wonder if it's harder to get accepted and to get ahead. I know that you have been accepted and you have gotten ahead and you're well respected. So I wanted to get your perspective on this from your own career and from maybe others that you've witnessed. Is it easy to get accepted if you're a little bit different?
I would say that the only times that it's not easy is if it gets caught up in your head. If you're confident and you're being yourself, it's going to show, and people are going to like that more than if you're trying to be something that you're not. For myself and the people that we interview, the people that we want to bring on, I don't really care about their personal lives when it comes to the work environment. Majority of the people that I work with in any job, I always become really good friends with. Even if it's a huge company, I try to meet everyone. But that's, I'm kind of a weirdo. I like people. But it's just be true to who you are. And I wouldn't be worried about it, because myself, it doesn't matter if what you look like or what you believe in, as long as you're good at your job. There's some people that look very extreme. You brought up my tattoos, which, you know, in the earlier days, maybe that was like 10 years ago, that was kind of frowned upon, or I always used to cover them up. But nowadays I don't. There's a lot of reasons why I don't do that anymore. It's socially acceptable, but I think I've also kind of proven myself. And I remember even in the early days, like being kind of unconfident about that and wearing long sleeves, or like being really buttoned up in meetings. But then I realized that's not who I am. And kind of even, you know, I've fallen from that trap and have learned just be true to who I am. And, you know, people accept it. They just want a really good employee. They want a really good consultant. They want someone to tell it how it is. And they want someone to do a really awesome job.
That's a very good point. I've seen this as well. If you are a top performer, if you stand head and shoulders above everybody else, then you command respect. That is absolutely true. But I wonder about those people who are not that good. Because, you know, you're really good. But what if you are not that good? What if you're just average or below average? You're still acceptable as a contributor to a project. You're not a top performer, but you are a performer. And I wonder for those people if it's harder to get accepted, or they have the same experiences as you. But we'll leave that for another time.
Yeah, I would just say I don't think it matters. And the people that I've worked with in the past that were interns or, you know, first job, I always just tell them to make sure to get involved, meet as many people. Don't be quiet. Have a voice. Even if it's wrong, speak up. And it goes back to just the growing of the confidence that happens within your career. But
that's a good point. Speaking up, I think it's very important myself. However, I have a counterpoint. I might say that.
Now I'm nervous about the counterpoint.
No, it's nothing. It's nothing as monumental as you might think. I'm just thinking from a point of view. If I'm putting myself in the shoes of somebody who just started out, and maybe has some fears, some internal fears, maybe some imposter syndrome going on, and he or she is thinking, yes, I can speak up, I can let people know, but then they will find out how wrong I am, or they might find out how little I know, and then they will not respect me, or maybe they will fire me. That would be a concern, right? You're talking about speaking out, but it's easy to speak up when you have that confidence. But the problem with unfortunately, with most developers is that they don't have that confidence. They're introverts. They have never had these kinds of social experiences before. And for those people, it's hard to speak up. So I wonder if there's something we can do as employers or as people who are in positions of authority within companies to make it easy for them, to make it acceptable for that, I would say, a silent majority, in my opinion, that finds it hard to do something that may be very simple for you, maybe simple for me. What do you think about that?
Well, just overall, I feel like people shouldn't be afraid to be wrong. And the idea of like, oh, I'll get, you know, fired or whatever, if that's not really that individual's issue. The issue would be that whoever they report to or their superiors to them aren't doing their job correctly. So if someone does, you know, say something incorrect and it's just completely wrong, I would hope at the end of that meeting or that discussion, or even at that moment, you know, not embarrassing the person, but they would come and talk to them and be like, so you said this. I just want you to know that you know, if it is completely wrong, explain why it's wrong, but help mentor them on how they can improve. A good working environment should be safe, and everyone there, as an employer or as a coworker to someone, we should all be working for the common good to improve and really help benefit each other. And as someone that's junior, is kind of that afraid to speak up because they may be felt like or be identified as like a phony. I would say highly steer away that thought and make sure people just work on speaking up and being a part of a job, because a lot of times, especially software development, there's skill sets that are involved, there's knowledge that's involved, but the big thing is communication and collaborating with a team. And if you're afraid to speak up because you're going to be wrong, how are you going to actually communicate, collaborate with team members on a project?
That's a good point. So, in other words, get over it.
I guess so, yeah.
No, we should have a little bit more empathy. I think that you're absolutely right. People need to speak out and speak, just in general. Be comfortable speaking, be comfortable writing, be comfortable putting thoughts into words, whether it's written or oral, because it's a skill. That's another thing that gets missed. It's sometimes a confidence thing, and sometimes it's a skill thing. You know, somebody might be confident, but they have no idea how to coherently put thoughts into words. And that comes with practice. And if you have not done that, if you are just getting into college, or if you're in high school and just don't have that experience, then start now. Start writing your thoughts. Blogging is a good idea, right? If you start a blog, then you will be forced to write, and then you'll have to come up with thoughts that are coherent, they make sense, and they have a beginning, middle, end kind of deal. So hopefully you'll do that. And listen to podcasts like Mentoring Developers or other podcasts, because then you'll hear other people who are just as clumsy as you are. And we are all clumsy, I will admit. I grew up as an introvert, and I figured out a way to speak out. I figured out a way to communicate, and I think it's a skill, so everybody can do it.
Well, you just said a bunch of really great things, and that's very true. These are skill sets. These are things that take time to learn, and I think I would just say don't be speaking just to be speaking, because that's probably just as bad as not speaking. And if you have something to say, if you are talking, make sure you have a point, something that's going to add to the conversation. You're not just repeating or echoing what someone else said, but maybe even in the early stages, as long as you're just participating, making good eye contact, nodding along, looking like you're paying attention, not having your phone out unless you're talking about a mobile app, just being active in the moment.
Great advice. For somebody who's curious and they're intimidated, they want to get into this software development business, they want to be a developer or designer, and they want to see if this is a good career for them. From your point of view, how will you rate this as a good career?
Is that on a scale of 1 to 10 or a 3 to 7 scale?
It's on a scale of 1 to 10 or really good to really bad or anything in between.
I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is the highest, this is by far 10. I love it. We get to be creators every single day. With the openness of the web, we can develop things and create concepts that are unknown to the browser. And anyone can develop the next element, the next functionality for the web. That's what's so beautiful about it, is we're not just doing individual projects, but we can actually be developing to the core of what the internet really is. We all collectively own it, and the industry has grown so much. It's just been really fun. It's not easy though. As I kind of mentioned earlier, I've dedicated a lot of time to this, but I don't even really consider it, because people are like, well, you put a lot of time into, you know, your job. And I'm like, this isn't really my job. It's more of like a lifestyle. It's something that is a part of who I am now. So I think it's bigger than just a job. It is kind of a lifestyle, and you have to kind of be inside there to really, really be a part of it. But, you know, you don't have to go as crazy as me and dedicate your life. I'm definitely not saying that, but it is a fun industry to be a part of, and you can be involved at smaller levels to bigger levels. It's just fun and exciting to make something out of nothing. We're all kind of creators.
Do you have any regrets when you started programming, when you started designing? You got into it. It wasn't probably as planned, but I wonder if you have any regrets about how you went about things, or do you think that you could have done something differently if you could start over?
That's a tough question. I think regrets, a bunch of things come to mind, but we don't have enough time to talk about all those. But looking at where I could have done things better makes me think about where I failed. And I failed a lot of times to get to where I am, and I still continue to fail on a day-to-day basis. And failure is something that helps you improve and get better. So looking back at some of the things that I definitely failed at, or maybe regret, or I could have done better, is something that I now think I'm good at, is communicating with team members. I used to want to be the one-man show, the person that could do everything at one time, owning every piece of it. And in reality, all I became was a bottleneck. And as I matured in both my career and, of course, in development and design, I realized communication, collaboration, as I said earlier, is just as important, if not more important, than knowing the skill set. And there's different pieces that need to be happening in parallel. But I made the horrible mistake of thinking that I could do it all and they could just kind of happen A, B, C, D. But in reality, they should have all A, B, C, D should be happening in parallel, and we should be working together. So definitely huge failures on there. I have some very specific ones, but that's going to be the biggest one that I have that will make sense probably to this audience. In the amount of time that we have.
Yeah, I think that we may need to bring you back here for a follow-up interview to go into some more details. Hopefully we'll get a chance to do that at some point.
That would be awesome.
Do you promote yourself? Do you think it's important for new developers to promote themselves?
I've become kind of a joke with my self-promotion. So I have stickers, I have mugs, I have t-shirts, I have cups. But those are kind of like gimmicky, joking things. But I spend a lot of my time on Twitter. I'm involved with a lot of different internal portals, so client portals, so some of the clients that I work with, as well as the company I work with. Most companies have some kind of internal or intranet that we can be communicating. I make myself really active in those, A, because it's an opportunity for me to learn, but an opportunity for me to help out other people. And that's really how I do my self-promotion, is through these different social networks. I mentioned earlier some Facebook groups, very active in that. But I go to conferences and I like to meet people. So a lot of networking. I usually am carrying around business cards. So, you know, that still works. But I just try to be nice and try to meet as many people, go to conferences, active in social groups. And if I'm speaking at a conference or some kind of event, I always tell people, reach out to me. And I stay true to that. I always will make time for people, even though I'm busy. I'll grab coffee. And I believe in that rule, like you meet one person and then they're connected to nine people. So if I can meet five new people this week, I've maybe met 45 new people at the end of the week. So it's just, I love meeting people, and that's really how I promote and social.
Yeah, I like your relentlessness. I think if you keep doing what you're doing and keep doing it, and you do it without fail, then there's no way that you will not get where you need to be. Because perseverance, I think that's the key here.
Yeah, but I mean, there's jokes about me in like all the self-promotion that I do, but I'm really not necessarily even just doing all this for myself. There's different organizations that I'm a part of that I want to promote. And a lot of my networking is involved to outreach to different organizations and people, and really helping out the community, especially the people here in Columbus, because I really believe in the city of Columbus. It's kind of, we're too early to say that we're a tech hub. And I kind of always giggle when I hear people refer to Columbus as a tech hub. Maybe someday we'll be there, but we're far away from it. And my involvement with different organizations and even meeting people, it's about how we can grow this city and to really make something really awesome. So a community of developers and designers that work well, even if we're competitors or our skill sets don't align, we have something in common. And even if that common goal is just growing the city.
Have you ever been mentored by anybody? I know that this is a show about mentorship. And what I wanted to see, I wanted to pick your brain and see if you think mentorship should be a thing in companies, should be a formal activity organized formally or informally, or acknowledged as a bona fide, you know, legitimate thing to do. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, just mentorship is mentorship. And another approach will be like, you know, you start a job at a company, and if you need help, you ask somebody, but you don't need formality around it. There are two approaches. I wanted to see which side you're on, and also if you've been mentored by somebody.
Okay, so I'm going to give kind of the non-answer answer to that, the first part, if I've been mentored. Because I feel like every single day, I'm always trying to learn as much as I can. And I feel like I'm being mentored indirectly every single day by the individuals that I'm surrounded with. I'm just always open to learn more. And if I think of true, like a real mentorship, I don't think I've ever really had one where there was like one person that I really went and met up with and we said, teach me this, or I want to learn this, can you help me? Or, hey, I've identified you as someone that I really think is awesome and I think I can help you out. I've never personally had that happen to me. There's definitely some people that have been role models to me and have helped me grown, because I would, you know, I didn't figure this all out on my own. It was always being surrounded by really awesome people. And I could list off a bunch of people there, but the list is really, really long. I wish I had someone that, you know, I could have gone to make it a little bit easier. So it kind of leads me into the mentorship or mentor program, or just having that someone to go to. At my job, we were always about furthering education, and we have many opportunities for it. But I created a mentor program this year because it's part of like our culture, and our core is to learn from each other. But we never really had an outline about it where you could say, I want to learn X, or I want to learn Y, or maybe X and Y. And then someone would be like, I'll teach you that. And, you know, it was always more like, oh, we're on a project together. I don't know how to do this. Oh, let me help you out. And then maybe you stay late. But this program is a 6-week long program. You know, it's a guarantee that you have to meet with that person 1 hour for 6 weeks. And you just are focusing on what they want to learn. And at the end of the 6 weeks, you kind of have a deliverable that you review together. And within this program, you meet with the person. So they say that I want to learn X. And then you kind of meet for like in an orientation or initial meeting, a kickoff meeting, and you outline, hey, person, what do you want to learn? And then you just write down notes of what you want to learn. And then together you create an outline. So as the mentor, you say, this is the logical order here. And we're not going to try to boil the ocean because you've listed out a bunch of things. Realistically, I think we should only focus on these two items, but these are all good things that we can learn. So for the 6-week long program, so we're not having this 90-year long discussion about this general topic. Let's just focus on this. And we could always revisit the other topics later on. So then the mentor goes and they say, day one, this is what we're going to learn, X, Y, Z. Day two, blah, 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 so on to all the way through day six. Now, how it's different than a course or a workshop, it is very personalized. So what did you want to learn? And then day one happens. Say you had 6 bullet points for day one of items that you wanted to get through. If you never make it past bullet point one, that's completely fine. If it goes for 6 weeks and you're still on day one, bullet point one, that's completely fine. Different people, it takes them longer to learn other things. And some of them, depending on the background and the skills that they have, if they can't, why progress to the next steps if they don't have the core understanding of the first one? So it's really about that relationship between the student and the teacher. But really, it's about creating a relationship of being comfortable and open between each other to make sure that that person feels safe to ask the right questions. They don't feel like they're dumb for asking a question. And as the instructor, you're making sure that they know that it's okay that you didn't progress past this one step, because that's the most important piece of this whole 6 weeks, is that you understand that. And outside of it, I'm the type of person that I hear someone in, at a store talking about technology, and I my ears like perk up and I go over. So I do blindly introduce myself to people. But as I said, I'm kind of a weirdo when it comes to meeting people. I love people. And I've been, meeting with individuals one-on-one, from high school students to college students, a wide range of different age groups and personal experience, or they're just trying to figure out what they want to learn. I'm actually meeting with someone this afternoon to help them teach stuff. It's not really, some of these are just like a knowledge dump or them trying to figure out different things, but some of them turn more into a mentoring program where there isn't a schedule similar. It's not like the schedule that I have at my work, but this one's more of like, hey, I'm going to be here for you. And if you have questions, if the question comes at 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. or 6 a.m., I'm going to respond to you as quickly as I can. I'm going to make sure that I'm going to point you down the right direction. And some people like wonder why I always make myself available and I do all these different things, is because as an instructor, as a mentor, as I guess an expert in different topics, it's really like, I don't know, I find this really great feeling afterwards. And it's not this just feeling that I've helped someone out, but it makes you realize how much you've already known and all these years and dedication to your craft that you can teach someone else. And it makes you realize that all these years of work, dedication, maybe even sacrifices are definitely worth it. And to help someone out, as I said, it makes you feel good, but it also just makes you feel great that how knowledgeable you are. And it makes you take a step back and realize, this is where this person that I'm talking to right now is where I was at one point in my life. And now 20 years later, this is where I am. How can I help them try to be the next me or something like me where they can help out other people? And it kind of goes back to that whole community building. That was a rant.
This was very nice. I let you go on because people need to hear this. And most of us are not able to do it. Most of us are not willing to do it because we like to get paid for our time, and you're volunteering your time to help somebody for no monetary gain. So this is really commendable. Yep. And I think that people need to hear that there are people like you out there. They are, they care, which is good. And this is fantastic. So keep doing what you're doing. I think that you are making a positive difference to our communities, especially our development community, and hopefully you'll keep on doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and definitely the kind words. And this is awesome. And I remember when you were telling me about you setting this up, I was just like, I'm so glad someone's doing this. So definitely awesome. And I'm excited to hear future ones.
Absolutely. And I think we have some really exciting guests coming on in the future episodes. And the idea is to bring people who are one of us, either a senior person or junior person, a mentor or apprentice, or somebody who is thinking about this career, not really sure. All of those people, all of us have stories and have our reasons. So the goal for this podcast is to connect with people at an emotional level and not be so superficial about it, and try to understand where they're coming from, what are their struggles, and have some empathy. And I think that our industry could use some empathy, collectively. But we are coming at the end of this interview, sadly. So let me ask you some quick questions. and we can wrap it up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you listen to any podcasts or screencasts? Do you watch any screencasts or video podcasts?
Not religiously. To be honest, the one that I've been listening to has been yours. So,
well, wise choice, my friend. And what about blogs? Do you visit any blogs?
Yeah, I jump around. I would say A List Apart and the Sparkbox blog. So Sparkbox, which is an agency in Dayton, they have a pretty nice blog that you can get to on csparkbox.com, as well as Jason Grigsby. He has a fantastic blog. Those are my three favorite sources, but read a handful of other ones that I get from Digest.
Do you have any advice for software shops, IT departments, companies, startup companies, all these companies that are looking to hire new developers, perhaps out of school, right out of college, or perhaps, you know, junior developers? Do you have any advice for them?
The big thing is the resume, it never really aligns to the individual. I don't know what we can do as an industry to kind of resolve that. There are some really great, talented people that may have just not had the opportunity to work. I think hiring and talking to people with less experience, every organization needs to be doing that. And we, as a company, you shouldn't be just looking to hire someone that's 10, 20 years. There's a breath of fresh air that comes with someone that is new in the business world. And as I said, like even through the mentoring program, it allows you that opportunity to help someone else, to mentor them. And in reality, sometimes they could be a lot better than our most senior people, you know, fresh eyes, not stale, those types of things. But being open to bring in new people. And I think the industry is starting to get that. You used to see a lot of times like 7 to 8 years of experience, worked in two different companies in this role. And it's like that stuff doesn't really matter. What matters is if you're good, if you're passionate. So hire passionate people, look for and years of experience doesn't really matter, nor does the resume.
Yeah. And Scott Hanselman talks about the 10 year developer experience, or a person with 10 years of experience, but they have the first year repeated 10 times versus somebody else who's actually have the depth of and the breadth of experience because they have kept themselves abreast of new technologies and they keep trying and push the envelope. So no two people are alike, and mm-hmm. don't put people in boxes. I think that would be my advice.
Yes, that's definitely great advice.
So I would like you to advise our listeners, new and aspiring developers, tell them what they should do to get ahead in their career and to get a great job.
Biggest advice I can say is really network. Try to come out of your shell. And that's a skill that takes time. But if you're kind of the person that's more of an introvert, you still need to break out of that shell. As I said, like the biggest piece of software development is the communication collaboration. Which is kind of hard to do for individuals, but try to make a strong effort to get out of that shell, meet new people, go to community events, and just be confident. Be confident, passionate, and being able to speak up. Those are kind of vague things, but be yourself, be passionate, love what you do, and really make sure that this is the right career for you.
That's great. And I know that you're involved in helping new developers. You're involved a lot in the community. You have mm-hmm. a ton of work that you're doing. And I want you to talk about some of the work that you're doing and tell us about the websites people can go to, the Twitter accounts that they can follow, and any other way that they can keep up with what you're doing.
Yeah, so my buddy and I started what's called the Columbus Web Group 2.5 years ago, and it's just grown in popularity because we're really aimed at creating not just a monthly meetup or organization that is, you know, a goal of putting on a meetup. What we really want to do is entertain people and make it be an event that people want to go to and they're going to learn. So we do best practices, methodologies, and approaches. And we're not targeting just designers. We're not targeting just developers. We're really targeting this industry. So giving you the opportunity, if you're a designer, to learn about development, if you're a developer, to learn about designer, And Adam and I make sure that we're helping out our instructors to fit the audience. So making sure that it's not getting too tech, it's not getting too design. We do some crazy things from helping our instructors write their bios, to helping them with their abstracts, to helping them put together their outline, to even creating graphics for their PowerPoint presentation. So that's through the Columbus Web Group. And then how you can find out about us is to go to meetup.com. You can also do a Google search for Columbus Web Group. Or if you go to, this is the easiest one, columbuswebgroup.com, it will redirect to our meetup page where you can find out about all of our latest upcoming events. We also have a Twitter handle, which is CBUS Web Group. So again, that's CBUS, like Columbus, but CBUS Web Group. And that's where we promote our upcoming events and all the stuff that we're doing. And we're really just trying to create a really great learning environment for people, a networking event. So as I mentioned, like coming out of your shell, if you're in the Columbus or the Mid-Ohio area, I highly encourage you to come out. Everyone's very open, very nice. It's a safe spot and you'll learn something new. And in addition to all that, we also do what's called weekend workshops that we also kind of promote through our Twitter handle. So they're called Columbus Web Group Weekend Workshops. You can find those on Twitter, and we actually do the tickets on Eventbrite, but they're 1 to 4 week courses that are completely free. It's kind of built off some of the mentoring that I've done in the past and Adam had done too, to create a unique workshop experience where it's limited to 10 people per class. The instructor is talking about a topic, so we release a title and a description. Instructor goes out and reaches out to the 10 people that have registered for the class, and they say, what do you want to get out of this class? And the instructor changes the course to fit the needs of the individual. So creating a personalized experience, a workshop that allows you to learn something new, and it's completely free. Everything that we do is completely free because we understand that as a college student or someone that's in high school, or even if you're in the, you know, have a full-time job, it may be difficult to spend money to get to further your education or to go to some events that you really want to. So we make sure that we give away everything for free and put on events that people can learn.
I hope that people will take advantage of this. And even if you're not in the Columbus area, you can still benefit, because do you post slides or some material that people can download?
Yeah, so we post videos. So we have a pretty high production kit that I put together. So we do live editing and we post them. You can find that on my YouTube channel. And I also promote those through my Twitter handle, which is Nice Transition. But we post those on our meetup group, again, through our Twitter. So slides are always out there, and so is the content. And we continue the discussion after each meetup.
And what we can do is we can put all of these great resources that you have told us about and put it together into a page, and that will be the blog post that accompanies this episode. So awesome. Send us all this information and we'll make it available. We'll make sure to send you some traffic.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, Kevin, it was a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, this was super fun. Thank you. Thank you for thinking about me.
Absolutely. Okay, see you later.
All right, take care. Bye.
You know, in this show, we'd like to have different perspectives. We want to have senior, experienced mentors and developers, and we want to have designers and user experience people. We also want to have new and aspiring developers, people who are in the middle of their career, or people who are just starting out, or they'd like to get into software development and they're not sure how to go about it. All those perspectives are important for us to get a complete picture. So I'd love to have you on the show as a guest or as a panelist in a discussion panel. All you have to do is go to mentoringdevelopers.com/join. There is a Google form there where you can tell us your preferences, and you can say what you're interested in, and we'll try our best to schedule you in. So all you have to do is go to mentoringdevelopers.com/join. I'll see you there.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.